from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are Live from the Path.
Live from the Path, going to be from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. Welcome to the program.
They call me the Rizzler.
They don't call you the Rizzler.
No. I've never called
you
that.
No. If they did, it was for a very short amount of time, and it was because you gave them money to do it. Okay, here's what we got going on the program. Hey, we got a lot going on the program today. First of all, Mike's question for the room is, are there, like, what places in the scriptures have you taken in and were difficult to understand, and then you figured out, you're like, I got it. You studied, you looked it up, you asked around, you're like, I got it. And then the very next time you came back to this same part of scripture, you're like, ah, crap.
What the heck is this?
This is throwing me off again.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I know it's not what I think it is, but I don't have any idea how to take it in. So, like, that's Mike's inquiry into the scriptures.
Here's the thing, is most of these things are found in the Old Testament. So if you're not a frequenter of the scriptures in the back, in the first half, you're not going to have some very... There's a couple in the New Testament that I would usually flag, but I think most of these examples are definitely in the Old Testament.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, second question. So everybody in the room, so Dan's back, Mike's back. We've got Aiden in the room with us on Live from the Path. And all three of those fellas have recently been across the U.S. border and serving people for Jesus. And one of the question I want everybody to answer is, like, one, give me like a top memory. And it doesn't have to be measurable by any standard. But, like, you know, you think about your time in Mexico or Zimbabwe, and you're like, boy, this memory is going to stick with me. But then second to that, I want you to tell me, can you think of something where you feel like, based upon your experiences in Zimbabwe or Mexico, like, what are you going to take with you from that experience that you feel like either maybe change every day or something like every day, how you think about something, the way that you're going to approach something that you're going to do? So, like, what are you taking with you beyond just the moment from those times? And so all the three guys in the room are subject to that query. And we'll see what you got. And you guys can be thinking about that too. Like, if you've been on some sort of, it doesn't even have to be, you know, overseas or something like that. Like, you were intentionally taking time to go serve someone for Jesus. And, like, in what way has that changed something for you that's beyond just the moment of having been part of it?
That's a tough dichotomy with something like serving people for Jesus. Like, I just imagine a guy throwing a cup of coffee at somebody and be like, for Jesus. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, I don't understand.
Yeah, do I get to decide? I think that the question is like, is it in the eye of the beholder, or did the person that's doing the serving get to say, this is for Jesus? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's when you find a church that'll haul up in the middle of a 5K with water at, like, turn three, and they're like, bless you. Or, like, this is from the church, the Methodist church on the 5th Street or whatever. And they're just handing out water bottles. And then, like, on the scale of, like, 0 to 10, how much for Jesus is this really? And or you're just being a nice person.
No, actually, so if that were the example, let's say that that's your example, because you're lame. And I would be curious, actually, like, what is your takeaway? Besides the fact that you're like, oh, hey, I did something good or kind to other humans, which is fine. Is there anything about that you feel like God might have been using to change something about how you think about things or how you approach things? Like, I'd be curious on the answer for someone who had done something like that.
I know what I think the answer is, but I will not speak to it.
Okay. All right. There was someone, I'm not going to tell you who it is, so that you can gossip about it. But we had had this group, a musical group on the show a number of years ago. Actually, none of them running this through my mind. This scenario could be multiple of them.
It was Chris Tomlin.
Yeah, okay.
He was in here.
So Christopher P. Tomlin was in on the program. Hey, I thought about reaching out to a band this week, and I was trying to think, like, we look illegitimate, right? If I send you some sort of Facebook message.
Stop it, Ben. Stop it.
like, who the heck are these guys? And if you look at our online presence or how we describe ourselves, it doesn't help. And so I thought, hey, how could I make us look more legitimate? I should say, at least this guy who you may know agreed to be interviewed by us.
That's your plan?
Yeah.
Our social media looks like it's run out of the Philippines.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy was Filipino, so now it's going to be harder to approach. Thank you for doing that. Anyway, so there was a guy from one of the bands that was in the show, and he posted the following, okay? And he says, religious trauma group therapy, Pate Knight prompt. How did you feel in religion versus how do you feel now? How do you hope to feel after leaving? I've never felt closer to hell than when I've been trying to unlearn the suffocating darkness of fear, guilt, shame, anxiety, manipulation, and control that religion instilled in me. Every day I'm working to take my power back, find myself, and continue to work through all the darkness and internalized lies that come up. The battle's never over, but the progress is worth the pain. Okay, I want to come back to this because the thing that guy expressed is not uncommon for folks that are going through a deconstruction or ex-evangelical, like, or leaving. And I guess I'm curious. I want to kind of talk through, you know, your thoughts on what about the God that we know, the Jesus that we follow, is causing some of people to react this way? Is it? Are there just people who are bad at following Jesus and, like, that's what this guy's interacting with? Are there things that are true about following Jesus that people just don't like? And so it feels like manipulation and a removal of your identity. And so, because, like, there's to me, I'm guessing that there's a mixture in here where, like, I don't know, you could say, well, whatever, we're going to get to it. I kind of want to talk through it because it's not uncommon. I've seen these kind of accusations a lot. And I want to do them respect by at least recognizing where's this the kind of thing coming from? Can you understand it? And then what is being misunderstood to walk away with these types of conclusions? All right. And then we'll give some advice on Dear Alive from the Path. By the way, if you need maybe you need some advice and you are just one desperate homie, you have no friends and decent outlets in life, and you want to get hold of Life from the Path, you can use the Life from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. We'd love to hear from you if you need advice or if you have general commentary on the show. I presume it's a complaint. That's why we named the line that. I suppose you can use it for other things if you're lonely.
It hasn't happened yet.
No, we got a couple of nice people like your bison episode, Mike. Bison's in heaven.
The kids making fun of me all week for that.
Because
my version of heaven has some kind of wearing bison to come by my house every day.
Yeah.
And like, we're at odds. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're not friends. We're not against each other. But he's not happy with me, and I'm not happy with him.
Hmm. Yeah, that's because it's not biblically accurate. If the lion lays down with the lamb, then Mike gets along with the bison.
No, it's unmentioned. That part of Scripture is actually to be taken literally. The lion and the lamb will lay down. The bison will stand all the time, and they will be upset at me.
I see. It's
bison are trouble.
Exclusive. Okay, let's do this quarrelsome parts of the Scriptures that you know and then you don't know. Mike, why are you even thinking about this?
Did you
run into one?
Well, yeah, of course I did. I was reading back through. I decided it hit me. I don't know, about a month ago. I'm like, I'm not taking in enough Bible, and then I felt like I was behind. I'm like, I should have been reading way more Bible up to this point. I'm like, I got to catch up. I've read through the Bible a couple, three times probably, but I just felt like I've been stuck in the Psalms, a bunch of wispiness, and then a lot of New Testament. I'm like, I just need to take the whole story in again. So I got on this, they're like, you should do a year Bible reading plan. I'm like, nah, man, it takes too long. I'm already behind. I gotta really take the Scriptures in. Find me a six-month plan. And the Bible app, it did not disappoint. And so I'm on a six-month Bible reading plan. And, of course, that has me rereading through Genesis. And it comes across, like, a couple stories here and there that I know that I've read them, but I don't remember them. And then when I do read them, I'm like, what the heck does this even mean? I don't even understand. And like the biggest one, I should have pulled it up. The one that I was just read through yesterday, I think it was, is I just moved on to Exodus. And, you know, Moses had gone up to the burning bush. And he's like, I want you to go back. And then Moses says, I don't want to go. You got to find someone to do it for me, blah, blah, blah. And he gets his brother to come help him. And he's like, now get moving. You need to get moving to this Egypt. And it says, Moses takes off for Egypt. And then the very next paragraph is like, now the Lord tried to kill Moses. I'm like, what happened between here and now that all of a sudden, like, the Lord is now super mad at Moses? And to get the wrath off of him, his wife Zipporah circumcises his son and then takes the leavens and touches Moses on the foot. And now all is back to being right again. And I thought, man, I know I've read this before. And for the life of me, I just have no idea what this even means.
Right.
Or what? I mean, and I thought, I know I asked somebody last time, and I wish it would come to my mind, and I just sat there and thought about it for about 20 minutes, and I thought, you know what? I don't care. I don't know. It was not a huge part of the Bible, but I thought, I know I've looked into this, but I have zero idea what it was supposed to mean at this point. And I thought, this has to be, I wonder if anybody else has some. Like, has these big old glaring parts of the scriptures where they're like, every time I read it, I'm like, I don't know what happened here. And we were moving along, and all of a sudden, whammo, circumcision, touches foot, we're now everything's good again.
I would say, so I'm going to take the cheat to start. This is getting better, but Revelation, holistically, I think I have to get reoriented every time. Like, I'm sure Dan's taught on Revelation, and you go through it, and you're like, ah, okay, I got a handle on this. Same thing happens at the back half of, like, Matthew 24 or something. You feel good about it, and then if you go 9 months away, a year away, and you read it, and you're like, well, hot dang, I thought I convinced myself this was not the right interpretation. And then I have to, like, reorient and not, like, slip back into, I don't want to say the plainest reading, but, like, the thing where most people read it just a little too shallowly or too quickly. That will happen to me on some of the apocalyptic literature stuff, for sure.
Well, especially when in between, you know, you teach on it, you have it down, and then you, read all the Left Behind books and watch the movies, and then 9 months later, you go back and read it again. You're like, okay, now you're all messed up.
Oh, no, they got me twisted. Like, no,
there's actual truth in there somewhere, and it's not, well, it just messes everything. Uh-huh.
I think, like, I actually have a hard time when it comes to, like, things like Isaiah, Ezekiel, it's not an individual story that'll get me tied up, but, like, I have to go through a lot of work to reorient myself and, like, what are we even talking about here? Because, you know, some of the problems, and this is what has left people the ability to do weird things with prophecy or things that feel like future promises, is like, in what way is this relevant to the people who are hearing it? And then perhaps in what way is it also relevant to a broader part of God's story? And like, I'll look at these, I'm like, did that happen? Because I'm not sure that was fulfilled, and that doesn't look, and then I'm like, then it looks like I'm just staring at a book full of, this stuff is real lofty language that they feel like promises that never came true.
Yeah.
And so Yahweh needs to be held to account as to why these things aren't happening. But like, if I go back and I reorient what I'm thinking about, and like their propensity towards rhetorical language, there's like often using, let's see, extremes, you know, always is a nevers when they don't really mean that, you know, and you kind of realign to some of that stuff. And then I get kind of back where I should be. But like those ones, I think it takes some effort for me to get reoriented.
Is it really like a Hebrew or Jewish way of writing that like the author or the narrator never seems to give you like how to feel, like doesn't tell you how you should feel about something?
No, actually, I think there's, what's interesting is this is true. It's less true, I think, in the New Testament. I think, like, if you read Paul seems to anticipate things that you might be thinking. I'm going to say, in fact, Romans is just a run of, I say a thing, I know you're going to take it in wrong, and so I'm going to correct it.
Yeah.
And I'm
going
to say
it. By no means.
Yeah. And so Paul does that. But you're right, like, take the Pentateuch for sure, the Tanakh or whatever, and then, like, even as you go through the rest, it presumes everyone's going to have a common reaction to it because there's a shared morality among the people. This kind of odd, duplicitous, we might have 100 different feelings about this thing it's not like brand new, but it is new. It is unfamiliar because they weren't questioning some of the underlying things that the people believed, right? It didn't have to be expressly stated. Now, from a New Testament perspective, one of the great examples of that is Philemon. So, like, you go through the book of Philemon, it's just a chapter, right? So, and in Philemon, Paul's talking, what we want Paul to do is we want him to say, free Onesimus, cancel all slavery. Onesimus should be totally free. That's what we want to happen. Paul doesn't really do that. He goes, I want you to take Onesimus back as a brother. Now, here's what we should know. What Paul is saying is, I want you to give him more than his freedom. You can't enslave your brother. And so I want you to greet him as a brother, and it's implicit that you cannot keep a slave who was your brother like this. But what we want, because we're going for the things like, yeah, but just say, I just need someone in the Bible where I can point to and say, Yahweh said no slavery, so that we don't have these awkward conversations about things that the scripture talks about. And so it's because you couldn't possibly read the words of Jesus and say, here's what it's like to follow Jesus, and think it's at all reasonable to retain Onesimus as a slave.
But we struggle with that, right?
We do struggle with that.
We will read that in our modern Western context and go, well, he can still keep his brother as a slave. That's wrong. You know what I'm saying? And like, that is not what Philemon is saying at all.
No.
But that's what I, if you read it flat and read it without a cultural understanding or understanding God's character or heart as a whole, like those two things can't sit.
Yeah. It's because we have a level of moral duplicity, or what the phrase is, cognitive dissonance, right? Like you believe one thing and you believe another thing, and they actually can't match. And so you have to, something has to shift. We do this a lot with, actually it goes back to a conversation we were having just before the show started, is you'll people like who are separating from their parents, having like an estrangement. And sometimes on the child's side, you'll hear the child go, man, when I was being raised, these things were happening and these things were happening. And the parents are dumbfounded. They're like, that is not how it was at all. And like, the kid is telling a story as if like all these things were different. But the reality was, sometimes they have a belief about how a situation should have gone or how they should have been treated, and it doesn't match up with the reality of how they were raised, right? Like, they actually, maybe the parents' world was pretty good and there were just a few rough run-ins and normal parent teenage stuff. But to reconcile what they want to believe or how they feel, you actually have to recolor the past. And now it becomes, no, that person was abusive towards me, or like, they never gave me the time of day. And like, the parent could come back and go, what do you mean though? Like, we invited your friends over all the time, and like, we're the ones who did blah, blah, blah. And like, it's gone from your memory, because that's how cognitive dissonance works. You have to start changing something on one side or the other. And so I think that is the struggle, is there's a lot more duplicity in what is morally good. Trying to hold on to a whole narrative of like taking God's character holistically and not require, we're like, why didn't Paul just say? And Paul would look, oh, why would I have to say that? Like, it does not make any, how could I, if I invited a man I was met on the street and I invited him to come have dinner with my family. And so it's like someone going, well, but why didn't you say that we shouldn't hate him? What do you mean? I invited him into my house. Like, I obviously don't. What do you mean?
Right. Like, there's zero reason to bring this up.
Yes. And so, like, I think that the Old Testament, it's even harder because you're also not carrying around kind of like the oral tradition and the community that keeps you in check, that you don't start thinking wild, like, ridiculous things about God and his character. And so a lot of the places where we struggle, we're like, especially in the Old Testament, we're like, boy, that seems to go against what we feel comfortable with in God's character. It's just sitting out of context, and we're like, well, why does the Old Testament have to be ambiguous? It wasn't to them. They did not feel it as ambiguous as we are hearing it.
And we do for sure, right? Like, I was just reading about Joseph, right, and like the famine that he was managing. And he basically fleeced everybody in Egypt of their property, their food, their money, and their herds, until after the famine, the Pharaoh owned every stitch, including their indentured servants.
Yeah.
To the you know, Egypt. And I was reading, I'm like, yeah, that's and they're like, because he's a wise man. I'm like, he seems like a thief. You know what I'm saying? Like he played this out. Like, and he didn't have to. He could have given them food out of the generosity of God, gave him a heads up that the famine was coming.
Yeah.
And instead, he used it as a wise business maneuver to basically enslave an entire people. And I'm like, I feel like Joseph did him wrong here, but the Bible doesn't speak to it. So, like, am I taking it in incorrectly?
That's the hard. Actually, that's one of the hardest things, is the lack of biblical commentary on, like, when someone is bad, we just want him to go, and the Lord said he was a bad man, or right, he should not have done that.
Yeah.
It doesn't often do it. Like, but what we do is, and what people who are you know, generally in disagreement with the Bible, they'll go, look, the Bible condones this. It doesn't condone it just because it was there.
It just said it happened.
It said it occurred. It's actually a really good example is polygamy. The Bible does not come out and say you can't marry multiple people. There are biblical folks in the biblical record who are marrying multiple people.
Almost all in Genesis, really.
Right, right. Now, here's the thing. There's a couple things contextually that we should be taking into consideration. The first one is, I mean, yes, there was sexual things going on there. But, like, marriage was often about caring. This is why you get harems, right? You got very rich kings who they got, like, 100 wives. And some of these leaders are like, boy, I hope I end up in that harem. Because they're cared for.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have to worry about anything. And it was, like... the separation between the very rich and the people who had nothing was super broad. It was way imbalanced, right? And so this was not it's a moral problem for sure. But like, if you're being very practical about the matter, this doesn't make people that mad. And so there's a contextual issue about being married is something meant something to care for someone. You're taking responsibility for them. But secondly, follow every polygamous situation in scriptures and you tell me whether any of those worked out.
Yeah, they were all disasters.
Every one of them
produced lines of disaster.
That's right. They all blew up. Now, if you look at it, like, does the Bible come out and say no polygamy? No, it doesn't. But like, you could watch everywhere that it happened that it doesn't match the pattern of which is otherwise spoken of and established. And so,
especially in the first three chapters of Genesis,
yes.
Right, where it says like a man leaves a woman, a parents to be with his wife.
Yeah.
Not wives. You know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't say, by the way, I mean not seven wives. Right. He just said, this is the ideal. This is what you're shooting for. This is what I designed you to be.
Yeah.
And then I didn't mention all the things you could do to pervert that and make that not right.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And like, I mean, you take the seven wives of Lamech and you follow all the other multitude of wives. Like, even for you're like, hey, this is a good guy. Israel marries multiple ladies. It doesn't go very well.
It goes terrible.
And so so that's the thing, is we want it. It makes our lives much simpler if it just goes, no polygamy. There, I said it. Scripture isn't generally doing that in a lot of different ways.
Which is funny, because like, one of the biggest conflicts in the Bible or the critiques of the Bible is like, it's not very clear, or that it's an overarching rule book, right? Like, all it does is tell me what I can't do. And really, like, a lot of, especially the Old Testament, produces an aim of character, right? This is what you're shooting for. I'm not going to take the time to list off all the things that you shouldn't do. That would be a much bigger book, right? It's easier just to say, here's the one thing you should do, or here's the attitude that we're going for,
yeah.
Not here's all the ways you could fail at it or you could make it not right. And so, like, it's an odd critique to come against the Bible that says it's just a book of rules that tells me what I can't do. And it's like, it really is not. It's mostly a book of very highly suggested things from the creator of the universe that goes, here's what's best. This is what you probably should shoot for.
Yeah, and it's even we even approach it wrong in the sense, even if you wanted it to be a rule book, like, ancient Eastern rules, like, laws didn't work the way our laws work. Like, ancient Eastern rules presumed, even, like, you take the Code of Hammurabi or other things that, like, it might have been that had some relationship with how you might think of, say,
Have you read the Code of Hammurabi?
Parts of it.
Is it Hammurabi?
It's Hammurabi.
I'll say Hammurabi. Dan, have you read this ham sandwich?
To my knowledge, I have not.
Aiden, where are you at on ham sandwich reading?
Never read it. Know of the guy.
Yeah. Okay, you've heard of it.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
No,
yeah.
Not the same, Ben. You can't talk casually like everybody's read ham sandwich and it knows exactly what you're talking about.
Anyway. So other, like, ancient Near Eastern or Eastern laws.
Ham on rye.
Yeah, ham on rye. So, like, modern law says, and we've run into this in America, right? Like, if it's not in the law explicitly, we might not be able to convict you. And so we're like, hey, if you stab a guy with a knife, he's, you know, you can convict him. But the guy's like, well, what if I take the butt end of the knife? The law doesn't say anything about butt end of the knife. Not guilty. Because, like, it's not explicitly stated. The law codes in the kind of when the Old Testament is starting to be codified and under Hammurabi's code and stuff, like, they would laugh at that, just like Moses would. Because, like, remember when he's getting his what's his dad's name? Remember Moses' dad?
No.
Anyway, he's like, gets his dad to help him put those tribunals together, right? Like,
that's his father-in-law.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Jethro?
Yeah, Jethro.
I was saying, begin with the J, but I can't remember.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So Big Jed and Moses got these judges, and they needed judges because the laws weren't explicit. They're giving you pictures of how things might, like, should work, levels of value. Just like, I'm going to botch the example, but, you know, like, hey, if your donkey stomps on your neighbor's goat, you owe him for the goat. That doesn't mean your neighbor's donkey can kill your chickens. And no one would have read it that way. They, like, and the reason you see the rules, like, the laws kind of refined, Leviticus is like this, because we're like, oh, it's a book of laws. No, it's not. It's a book of people disobeying laws. And then more laws coming to help say, no, now listen, like, let me bind you in a little bit more because your freedom in this area is causing
right.
difficulty.
Do we need to have 10 laws? If we say, look, if your donkey, you know, steps on a goat and it dies, you owe for the price of the goat. We don't have to have a law that says if the donkey steps on the chicken, you owe for the chicken. If it steps on the fox, yield for the fox. And right. like the goat was the law. Like yes. the point was, if it steps on an animal.
That's right.
The heart, the intent was well taken.
That's right. And you almost see in Jesus, you actually see that go back to the same principle. Because we stop saying, here are the 50, 60 things which I have to rebind all your behavior. We're like, Jesus, be like Jesus. Do the things that Jesus did. Think of people the way that Jesus did. Follow Jesus. And so it's like a reestablishment of what it looks like to, like, I will be your God, you will be my people. And then you find almost immediately within some of the epistles and stuff, people having to go, okay, but listen, like, this is when I said to follow Jesus, you seem to have perverted it already. And so let me give you some examples of which you're not thinking about it correctly. But the thing still stood. Just like the summarization of the old, like that Jesus gives of like love your neighbor, and like love God and then love your neighbor as yourself. He's like, that should do it. You actually should be just fine if you were to do those two things. But like, you guys are wily, and sometimes I got to really lay it out straight for you. And so yeah. that's why the laws continue to get more specific. But like Yahweh always like just do, like follow my character as expressed to you, and you'll be fine.
I think about it like when we were. This is unfair because we were talking about this before the show, but we were talking about like the separation between the parents and the kids, and some of this ties into some like anxiety things and depression things that we see in modern society, and like some of it, not all of it. So be careful before you hit the complaint line. But like some of it is flat out because you're spending way too much time thinking about yourself. Of the things that God says are priority, it is to love him and love the people around you. And if you're busy doing those things, you have a way less time to be able to sit and wallow in whatever perceived thing is happening to you. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, like a lot of these things show up where like you just start spinning around and around in your head is like a failings on your part versus other people's, or what people should have done based on what they did do and what your value is. And like, oh, and you just keep running it over your head. And you're like, I don't think that lofty. I'm just scared of like what the dentist thinks of me. You know what I'm saying? But like, here's the thing is if you go to said dentist or like, this is funny. I was talking to at least three kids this week where they're scared to death to make phone calls. Like they won't call. Like if they had to call to set up a doctor's appointment, if they don't have online scheduling, they will not be going to the doctor. They will not call a live person to save their soul. Right?
I sympathize with that, though.
But here's the thing. Like it's not your favorite thing to do, right? Like, no one actually likes doing it. But push comes to shove, I'm going to call them. You know what I'm saying? Or what if I had to order a pizza? If they don't have an online app because it's Rudolfo's Pizza and he's some old man who don't have some kind of online presence, like, if you really want that pizza, you're going to have to call them, right? They won't do it. And some is because it's like, well, what if I don't have the right answer to this question? Or what if they think that I'm an idiot? Or what if I stumble on my order? Blah, blah, blah. Like, once again, if you're not thinking about what other people think of you at all, right? It's not even in your mind space. Then you could screw this thing up to high heaven and no one even care. Not even you. Yeah. Wouldn't bother you at all. They're like, Rudolfo could hang up the phone and go, whoever just called me is possibly the dumbest person I've ever met. And you'd be like, I don't care. As long as I get this pepperoni pizza I ordered.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so like, it's interesting to like, it doesn't sound like it would have a whole lot of practical advice here. Or like God was unprepared for the generation we're in or the society we're in or the times we're in. But like the truth is he spoke to it, right? And all the things that we keep digging into and mulling over are the things that are actually causing us harm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. All right. Aiden, did you have one? Did you have like a particular stumbling block in the old scriptures?
I want to say definitely like easily like anything where... Oh, man, I'm like blanking what I had. I had something.
That's okay.
It would definitely have to be something like you read it and you don't immediately understand if it's like descriptive or prescriptive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's like, am I reading this right? Or is this just about a king who was like faithful and then he wasn't and then he immediately died?
Yeah, yeah, right, right, right. Yeah, actually, I would say it's funny. I was reading... Was it Ephesians or something? It's within the last couple of weeks. And I took it in. It was like within the first couple of chapters. Paul tends to do this. He goes the first couple of chapters and like, I don't have any idea what I just read, to be honest with you. Like, they were all a bunch of Jesus words. I get it.
Yeah.
But like, they didn't click. Nothing clicked in my mind. And similarly, like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. Like, do I need to spend a bunch of time trying to sort this out, or is it like it doesn't supposed to hit me today? Because sometimes, to Aiden's point, Sometimes the king hits you. You read something, you're like, well, hot dang. I tell you this, there's been a the kids are memorizing the part of James where it's like the two
minor man,
the pure religion.
Oh yeah, okay.
Do you remember what the two things were for the pure religion?
Widows.
Yeah, caring for the orphan and widows and not being stained by the world.
Yeah,
and I thought, crap, man, if those were like, I know they're not the only two, but if I just started there, I'm like, well, am I nailing those two? I don't know. Probably not. I'm beholden to the gas station.
You think the American church doesn't know what to do with orphans and widows? The orphans and widows part. It's just a culturally not a thing. I mean, we have them, right? I'm not saying we don't have them, right?
Yeah.
But like,
yeah.
It's not a central part of our culture as it is in a lot of other cultures.
That's my big talk when I go visit churches about the orphans in Zimbabwe. Is I've read that verse for my whole life, and you just kind of like, yeah, we don't have orphans.
Right.
I mean, you know, I know people in foster care, but they have homes now, so they have technically people caring for them. Widows, we have like insurance and stuff. I don't know any begging on the streets. I'm sure there's, you know, it's not easy street or anything. And so what do we do with them? You know, it's like, well, anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Right, contextually, right? So yeah.
do they have orphanages in Mexico, do you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of it is they don't like not have parents, period, but oftentimes it's their parents can't afford to take care of them. Mm-hmm. And so they have these orphanages set up to where if you like can't afford to take care of your kids, like that's what a lot of the orphanages in Mexico that you went to were like, where it's they have parents, they see them often, but it's like they physically cannot afford to like take care of them.
Right on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's like that one. I mean, I probably read that verse a million times and like, I understood it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just, I was in my kitchen, I was looking at it and go, you know, I can't, as a human being, I can't seem to process all the things at the same time. And so if the light was on this one right now, can I pray into that and go, am I missing anything on your calling on my life for orphans and widows? And can you help me understand, are there places of which I am being corrupted and I don't know it? Places in which I'm being influenced in a way that I'm not paying attention to, or that maybe I've just allowed for such a long time that I don't even notice it anymore. And I think that's true a lot. Like, Dan, I know you've had this situation. You preach on something and like somebody pulls something out of it and you're like, that was not the main point at all, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's not even quite right. Like theologically, it's a little iffy. You're like, I don't know. Do I need to correct this? But for some reason, God used a piece of something to light a fire in a person to go about his business on something. And like, whatever, God's going to use what he's going to use. And so I think the one of the biggest frustrations, and I believe this has come up before, is like God will use a podcast or something for my wife. And like, I maybe have had someone recommend you a podcast or a book. They're like, dude, you got to read this. Or like, this is a great podcast or a fantastic sermon. And you listen to it and you're like, eh.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, right.
I'm glad it tickled you out there, pal. But and here's the thing. It wasn't because there was anything wrong with it. It's just like the things that God uses that like fires people up or that they hone in on, it just isn't always the same thing for someone. So now I'm like all gun shy about referring people to podcasts. I'm like, you know, this could be good or it could be bad. And God just does what he wants. But anyway, maybe you read it.
Yeah.
But okay, you're listening to Life from the Path. I'd be curious. What are there ports, particular stories where you're like, boy, I think I understood that, but then you run into it again and you're like, doggone it, maybe I don't, or it peels you back every time. I'd be curious. Hit up the old Life from the Path complaint line 515-517-0085. Call or text. We'd love to hear from you. All right, so we kind of wandered into a little bit of Mexico, which means we're into the. The mission trip part of the program. And so we're going to start with Mike, and we're going to make our way around because Dan's got a few minutes to put together an answer. Mm-hmm. So the question was, maybe just a little context to what were you doing in Mexico? Because you and Aiden were on the same trip, right?
No,
different trip.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Same ministry.
Same ministry.
Okay. So I guess, you know, like lay some quick groundwork on what are you doing there? A memory that is going to stick with you, and then is there anything about that trip that you feel like you're taking with you holistically that has some level of impact maybe on your day-to-day?
So I was there solely because Aiden had gone last year, and Aiden and I were in a Bible study for a little bit before he had gone, and he went. He was just going to stay for, like, the summer. He was supposed to start college that fall, and they're not real big on internet and phones and whatever. And so I just heard from him every once in a while. And he ended up staying for like 6 months, I think it was. And so he didn't end up starting school till the second semester. And anyway, by the time he came back home, because he lives in the same town that I live in, I got a chance to meet him for coffee. And like he smelled like Jesus. Like he just was not the same person before he went. And he said, you should really go. And I'm like, well, I mean, I don't want to go. Well, I mean, whatever, you know. So, but then I said, I was praying about it, and I'm like, Lord, if he keeps bringing this up, then I will go. Like I can't just dismiss it out of hand. And so Aiden kept bringing it up. He's like, you should go. So I'm like, okay, good enough for me. And so I went. And so really, what it is there's a place in Tijuana, and Aiden will be able to tell you a lot more of the ins and outs of it. But like, basically, for a person like me, I show up for a week, and we help build houses for families in Tijuana. And they apply, like they have to have the land, and they pour like the concrete. That's what they have to do. And then a team of people will come in and just build them this simple plywood, 12x12, kind of little hut. It's got a door and a sloped roof and a window. There's a couple options. They can put the door and the window on the same wall. They could put it on a different wall.
Ooh,
These are the things they can think about. But yeah. Otherwise, this is the whole thing, right? So, long story short, the thing that I think that I will take with me about it, one, I've been to Ethiopia, you know what I'm saying? I'm slightly desensitized to the poverty thing. Like, it's not that I don't take it in, but I think I always felt like, especially Western American society, overcranks on the poverty. They grew up in it. You know, some of them are like, hey, we got to get, this kid is never, he's not in a proper classroom. We got to give him money for books and whatever. I'm like, His for generations, his people have been learning everything about what they need to know without the classroom. So, like, they're not looking at it as a deficit. So we need to look at it as, like, God-given human right deficits, not, like, American culture deficits.
Yeah,
I don't get as lost on that stuff as I used to. But what I did get, what I really liked about it, it pulled me completely out of my life for a little bit. And did the focus on love God and love people around me, which was time that I don't like. It's very hard to give in the life that I set up. That's for sure true. Kind of took some creature comforts out, took away, like gave me a lot of time for focusing on scripture and things to pray on, and really did reinvigorate me for that. One of the big things is like you're either a doer or a sender, right? Like missions has to get done. People have to know about the gospel of Jesus Christ. And like some of the way that we do it back in the United States is frankly lame and lazy and has no intentionality to it, opposed to people who are like, hey, there's an unreached people group. And what they mean by that is they don't even have a written language. They have a spoken language. And so we're going to have to figure them out. We're going to go there. We're going to live with them. We're going to come up with an alphabet. We're going to teach them their own alphabet. Then we're going to use it to write a New Testament. And then we're going to tell them about the gospel. And we're not going to say one word about it until we fluently know this new language, new alphabet, and new Testament, so we can tell it to them not through an interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
Because the most important message that we have is not going to get third-partied in there. And like part of me, like I let all that go to like, I hope a guy runs into me at the store, and I'm like, hey, dude, have you been going to church lately? And this is my plan. This is my gospel attack, you know what I'm saying? And so like that was a nice, refreshing look on maybe the way that I've been looking of how to talk to people. I'm watching people with intentionality basically donate their life up to 60 years old, from 20 to 60, to focusing on one tribe to get them to know for the possibility that they might accept Jesus Christ. That is a lot, and mm-hmm. that is very, very cool. So that's one of the things that I was definitely going to take away from there.
Daniel, were you going to say something?
Not... I wasn't going to interject anything.
No, oh, okay, no, okay. No. You kind of like got your, like you going to sit up and
I probably
he's got cirrhosis.
Myself. Yeah, yeah. Do you remember, this had to have been 7 years ago or 8 years ago or something, Mary Wastey was here on the program, and she was with like a Bible translator.
YWAM.
Yeah. And that was the only, she was kind of raising money to go over and do that very thing, like languages that people are using that aren't written down, aren't codified or whatever. Boy, yeah, what a deal. I think it is a great reminder that, like, it always feels so...
Indulgent?
Yeah, maybe. I guess like what I was is disappointing to me that I'm like, wow, what can I do? Like, I got to think of a bunch of stuff. And you know that there's plenty to do. You know that there is.
Yeah.
Even here, there's plenty to do. And as much as like it's like sometimes it's all kind of a movement of the spirit thing. Like sometimes God has you going. Sometimes God has you stepping out of what is a normal cadence of life to go do something. Sometimes he needs you right in your normal cadence of life for the things that are around you. And like, it's not easily prescribed. Like the listening to the spirit and then allowing things that he does through people or situations or opportunities helps to shape that. I don't think you can, if this helps anybody, I just want you to think about this. I don't think you can go wrong following the character of God. And so like, hey, how do I know if I'm supposed to be a person who just like is a light in my what seems like a normal path life? I have an office job and I raise my kids. And
I
blah,
teach
blah, blah.
Soccer. Whatever.
Yeah. Like that's option A. And option B might be, I don't really do some of those things because I'm working with the local abused ladies shelter over here and blah, blah, blah within my town. And then maybe the third thing is, actually, I don't even live here anymore. I'm going to go someplace else where the culture is completely different. And like, it's sometimes, like you get the impression that you might be missing out holistically on God doing something in either one of those three. And here's what I tell you. All three of those can be totally righteous. All three of those can be totally obedient. It's praying through it. It's watching. It's paying attention and believing that, like, if God has something for you, he's not like a maniacal behind a door going, he'll never figure out I wanted him to move to Texas. Like, God's not doing that. And so, like, but let's say, like, you can't be wrong following his character. So, like, maybe Nairobi is your ultimate destination and God's got a plan for something to happen with you in Nairobi. And maybe you're missing the clues. But if during your non-Nairobi time, you're like, you know, maybe I should go volunteer at that shelter for harmed ladies. It's not a hand slap.
Yeah.
Like, God's not going to be upset that you followed the notions of his character in what felt like obedience.
Yeah, you're not derailing his plan for you by doing something that is otherwise in his character.
Yes.
Right? How could you settle for something less like soup? Mike, you idiot, I want you to move to the Philippines.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what's going to happen.
No, and so, like, the thing that I think you run a risk on is stagnation and disobedience. Like, if you know God is calling you to do something and you're refusing it, you have a problem. If you go, I'm not sure which one of these things God is calling me to specifically, and so I'm going to sit, and I'm not going to do anything. And I don't mean like, hey, you were fasting and praying on it for even extended amounts of time. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking like you could look back at your life over the last 5 years, and you can't see that you are doing it, like doing these things that are expressions of God's character into the world. If that's not happening, that's a problem too. And so, like, if that feels like it's happening a lot more, like, we're getting a lot more expectation that, like, oh, you know, I want to listen to the Spirit. I want to be faithful to what God is asking me to do. And that's totally righteous. But in absence of something direct, you have a general revelation. You know what his character is. You should pursue that in all avenues as he continues to make some things clearer. And, like, sometimes it's just not on our timetable. We're like, God, my bones are itching to do awesome things for you today. And maybe God's got Nairobi in his pocket for you 8 years from now for something that is his plan and not yours. And so just take her easy and try to be obedient in the things he's given you. But don't carry a burden of, well, but what if I'm missing out on God's true path for my life? He's not hiding it from you. I promise. Listen and walk faithfully, and it will happen.
I would say that the last thing is it was really nice being around a bunch of people that love Jesus for a week. Like, I mean, we're not finding that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's hard to do in our everyday lives anymore. And like, everybody there loved Jesus, and like, I could meet a bunch of people that I wouldn't have met. And so that part
was invigorating.
It was very invigorating, yeah. Right? Like, I mean, it's not like we're best friends and like we're meeting for coffee every Tuesday or whatever. But like, I know that like it opens up your eyes to see that God is doing way more than you ever think he is. Even if like you're in a valley at the moment. Right, like God is like, you're like, I'm asking for God to move, and it just doesn't feel like I even know him, right? And then you talk to six other people who love Jesus and realize he's just tearing it up in their lives. Mm-hmm. Like, they saved a kid out of cancer, and we're building houses over here, and we're building a village over here, and like, God's showing up all over the place. So whatever you thought of him not being existent, your faith being misplaced, or whatever you thought that you had totally screwed up, like being around other people that are following God in a way, and they have stories that he is alive and in action. Just know that, like, you're just in a valley, man. Like, yeah. He's good and faithful, and his promises are true.
Yep.
So, okay, Aiden.
All right, Aiden Stone. Same question.
What was the question?
If there's anything else about the context that Mike provided that you think would be helpful, go ahead and provide that. And then, like, a key moment from your time in Mexico. What are you taking with you? What do you feel like you've learned or seeing differently or whatever from that experience that you feel like could or should impact your kind of day to day? What are your thoughts?
For like added context for the ministry, it's like there's kind of two aspects of it. There's the building the house, mm-hmm. which is basically just an excuse to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For like, basically, like, it's meeting a physical need.
Yep.
All right, so it does two things. It meets a spiritual need and a physical need. Mm-hmm. The physical need is the house.
Yep.
The spiritual need is more focused not on the people you're building the house for, but more on the people building the house. Mm-hmm. Like the youth group from, like, Danville, Iowa, mm-hmm. or something. Like, it's for them to get away from like everything, focus solely on God. And the motto of the ministry is like mobilizing Christ followers for missions, mm-hmm. which is like basically every day, 8 to 9 a.m. roughly, you're just getting like hammered with like biblical truth about just missions and God's heart for mm-hmm. like the nations. And the internship itself is different than that, where it's being like in a group, it's basically just like a church retreat. Being an intern is almost like preparing you to like live faithfully for the rest of your life in Christ, mm-hmm. where it's them saying like, if you end up like in like some Fortune 500 company making $500,000 a year, or living in like middle of nowhere Lesotho, like ministering to shepherds in like the mountains.
Yep.
As long as you are faithfully following Christ in both of those scenarios, the ministry did its job.
Gotcha.
And so I definitely want to say like something that I took from that time that will probably stick with me the rest of my life would definitely be just like the feeling of intense privilege mm-hmm. that you get being there, where it's like, wow, like America is not the norm.
Yeah.
Like widespread poverty is the norm. Houses with rotting plywood, shacks, like dilapidated buildings. That's the norm.
Yeah.
And like, you kind of mentioned that earlier with like, we don't really have like orphans or widows like mm-hmm. here. Being a widow doesn't like ruin your life.
Right.
Like here, orphans are cared for by like the government. There's like foster care systems. But there, it's if you're an orphan, you have to get a job. There's no one to rely on there. If you're a widow, it's same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you can't like work in the same way that a man can, or you are like barred from different places in society.
Mm-hmm.
And so being there and knowing like, for me, this will end.
Yeah.
It's like, I will always go back to Iowa. I will have AC. I will have a comfortable life. I will be able to get a state education. And the person I'm building this house for will probably never see a paycheck larger than like $50,000 a year in their entire life.
Yeah.
Just like seeing that is crazy. Like being so young, you're like, oh, this must be, this is it. This is everything.
Yeah. Which is what, like, which makes sense. Like that you almost have to force a perspective and you don't know that your situation is so unique. It's one of those things that like I've come, and I believe we've talked about this a number of times coming off with some of the short-term trips, is that like when your context is so unique, sometimes you have to force the perspective. Like you just, even you could read about it and it wouldn't change necessarily. Like it takes kind of experiencing some of these things to fundamentally alter what feels normal because you, and it's, it feels normal because then you prescribe it onto the rest of the world. Oh, well, this is how the world works. Well, it's not how the world works, to your point. Yeah. And so, yeah, that makes a ton of sense that like it just, it's something that has, that permanently alters how you interpret life around you, knowing that like it's not just your little snow globe, that some of these, the ways in which we think about it have either more nuanced or extensive perspectives, even, you know, a 20-hour drive south. Or even, I mean, it's probably true with even in communities within the United States, but like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, would you like, for, I guess for that reason, it makes sense to say, hey man, like most people should, like if you, the perspective gained is worth this type of trip. Even for nothing else, so that you start taking in the world a little bit more, it'd be accurately. Like, it's just not accurate the way that we understand the world in our limited bubbles.
So a group is only there for usually about a week or so, but an intern, I think you were there for like 6 months, something like that.
Yeah, June 2023 to December 2023.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, long time.
Yeah. So like, what is the, do you think that perspective is available for a group to gain within a week? Or is there something about like just like living there for 6 months?
I'd say it hits them within that week. Like, we'll take them to this community that's right outside the dump. Like, so there's this huge hill. On the top of this hill is this landfill for the entire city. On the bottom of this hill is this community that's popped up of people who are basically like entirely destitute. They'll go up this hill and they'll just salvage stuff out of this landfill. They'll use it to build a house. They'll recycle, try to make money off of it. And almost the first thing, every single time we like get back, we do a little debrief, like, what did you guys see? How did you feel? First thing, the most poverty they've ever seen. And we're always like, this is it. Like, this is like, this is what real poverty looks like. Yeah. You see poverty in the US, it's like someone will be homeless, but they have options.
Yeah.
There are homeless shelters. These people have nothing.
Yeah.
They have a church at the top, or like at the highest point of this community. And that's it.
Yeah.
And so it definitely hits them, but I wouldn't say it sinks in as much as like someone who lives there.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing it every day. You start to recognize the people coming in and out of these houses.
Yeah. Dan, because we saw that in Ethiopia too. Like, there were communities. As a matter of fact, it was super dangerous. Like, there had been a recent collapse at the dump for communities of people who had been, like, going there. Is that did you see some the stuff like that in Zimbabwe too, Dan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The more rural you get, the more poverty. We saw kids eating dirt and, you know, just doing whatever they can to put something in them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so, Dan, maybe I think you're up. Now, Dan is a frequent Zimbabwean, given his role with the ministry, and so maybe it's a question of uniqueness. I suppose there's something that feels unique about every trip.
Yeah, it's different every time. We partner with Hippo Valley Christian Mission. It keeps growing. It's a well-oiled machine now. There's 29 different schools. It's a three-prong approach: mind, body, soul. So with the mind, we built 29 now schools. With any school, there's a church. Of course, those churches plant new churches, and it starts spreading. And then we have health clinics for the body, so body, mind, soul. In the schools, they're hearing the gospel periodically here and there. Even within the schools, there's an extra layer of, it's called Living Proof, where there's a club, kind of like the schools here have different clubs that, you know, and they get more gospel, more songs, more scripture memorization and things like that. So seeds being planted all the time. And then we'll pop in and we'll just join in what they're doing rather than try to, you know, invent our own thing. We'll do a vacation Bible school at a school and have 1,200 kids running around, you know, doing crafts and singing and getting Bible lessons. And we'll have a pop up a tent, do a revival, and adults come around. They start hearing things. So we'll have weekend revivals, one in the midweek. There's a pretty continual flow of people who are accepting Christ because there's there's, like I say, there's so much seed being planted. We just get to kind of come in and help with the harvest, basically.
Yep.
And it's so cool. It's cool to see that. Like there was one probably that stuck out this time. What was at the end, that the church we planted 5 years ago, we went back and give him a little boost. And this guy, it's kind of like a 50 years ago here. Like you can do the invitation hymns. Like I haven't done an invitation hymn in
right.
the decades here in America, but you still do them there. And so we do the invitation and these people come forward and one guy specifically, he just stood out. Like he was almost shaking. You could tell it was he was like super seriously contemplating. Like there was some big life change. Like there was some struggle going on, you know. And it just like I don't know. It's just cool to see the light bulb turn on, and him processing what does it mean to die? You know, I'm going to die to myself here. I'm giving myself to Jesus. I'm surrendering to Him. And you know, it wasn't like just a, hey, let's get some life insurance. It was like no, you're becoming a disciple of Jesus Christ, a follower of Him. And it was just cool to see that. And then we had, in order to get, it was time for us to leave. We had to leave immediately afterwards. Usually we'll help with baptisms and different things that are happening. We had to go. So they sent us pictures later of and videos of, and he was part of that group. You know, it was just kind of cool to see that.
Yep.
We had I'm the director of development of the orphanage. That's additional back in the 20 years ago. The AIDS epidemic was so serious. The average life expectancy had gone down to the 40s, you know, for adults. Well, and there were children all over the place just roaming the streets. So they popped up an orphanage. And so we've had this orphanage. And now it's been there long enough that there's kids who grew up from, you know, infancy into adulthood. And some, like this one guy, Tanish, who I worked with, he's probably 25 now because he's gone to universities. He's a teacher now. He's a teacher at one of the schools. And he's just a great success story because he was literally roaming the streets 20 years ago, or whatever. And they brought him in. No one ever found his parents ever in all those years. And he, you know, accepted Christ and now he's doing great things. He's married, has a family of his own. And so anyway, he and I planned the first ever homecoming where we invited all these people who've grown up in the orphanage to come back.
Yep.
And partly to give hope for the kids that are there, because there's times it gets kind of dark. You know, you're like, I have no parents, no one cares. Maybe I had a parent. One kid was with his dad. He's a drug dealer. Dad got arrested, and that was all. So the kid's at the orphanage now. And so he's kind of he's old enough to he kind of knows the ways of the street, you know, and so he's kind of a troubled soul. One of our team became a sponsor of his because he has a similar background and they've connected and they'll have monthly conversations and video calls and all that stuff. So there's some connections that made, which is really cool. I'm kind of flopping around, but anyway, this homecoming was such a neat thing because all these people came back. It's a shame there to be of an orphan. You know, not only is it a disadvantage, but it's like, oh, you don't even have a family. Like you're just like,
right.
It's kind of they kind of hide that. They don't go around telling people that they grew up in an orphanage. But we're trying to create some pride and some dignity in it. And it was so cool that so many came back, and we celebrated and danced and sang and worshiped, and we gave them these cool Bibles that even all the preachers got all jealous and they wanted them too, you know, because they're pretty nice Bibles, the ones that were for the adults. It was just a cool thing. It was a really neat thing, and they got this big buzz going, and we're trying to create the newest school is in the orphanage, just opened in January. So the kids are learning better than they were before. You know, they were going down the road to a school, and now like we're educating them too. And our goal is to not just release them, but to you know, have lawyers and doctors and, you know, plumbers and teachers and like really train them in something, and to give them an advantage rather than a disadvantage. So, I don't know. It's just kind of cool to see some of this stuff in the works right now and to see it starting to work and to see that hope that the kids got watching the adults, you know.
Yep.
Because we do have some adults there. They're preachers. And like I said, there's plumbers and teachers and one of them's a politician. so they have a future, which is cool. It's cool to be part of that. The thing like I brought back, and I do this every year, but it was just so more obvious this time for some reason of just in my life. There's been a handful of times I can say that I was really in tune to the Holy Spirit more than normal. Like mm-hmm. we were kind of talking earlier, like just sense the Spirit.
Yep.
One was when we planted this church, and in probably at least the first 5 years, it was just like the radar was always on. There was just you just were intentionally seeking. You didn't have time to get complacent or apathetic or lazy or anything. You know, yep. you just had to be on because you don't know if you're going to survive another week, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you just kept, you had to. And when we go on the mission field, it's often that way too because you're just there for 2 weeks. And so we don't want to waste time. We don't want to play games. We play games with the kids, but you know what I'm saying. yeah, they're intentional games with the kids. We just don't want to lay around and miss something that God had for yep. us. So the radar is just always on, and so many cool stories come from that conversation you have with someone who you might have just walked by if it hadn't been like, I need to talk to that person, and things like that. And so several of us intentionally said, man, we've got to continue that when we come back. Because we do all kinds of things, you know, there's all kinds of ministries and outreach. We go into homeless camps, we do all these things, but sometimes even that gets routine.
Yeah.
Because, well, that's just our every other week homeless thing, you know, we have, that was Bill, you know, but we don't stop and say, Bill, do you really, I mean, honestly, how you doing with Jesus?
Yeah.
We don't go there often enough. We'll pray with them and stuff, but it's like, we need to be more urgent about that. In the routine things we're doing here and not let them become routine.
Yeah.
And so let's see. I guess we'll see how long you fight that battle because that's where we go. We kind of go that way. Whatever it is we do, even in just the Sunday morning gatherings, you can start mailing it in after a while. Okay, do a few songs and get a little sermon. And
yep.
And we go to El Mariachi and have some Chacos, you know.
Yeah.
Yep. Rather than like, okay, this is a moment. We have a time. We have a God moment. We got people coming, seeking God. Here we are. Let's just do something with this.
Yep.
You know, and that's bigger than a show. Be careful when I say we do something with this. I mean, let's let God do something with this.
Yes. Right. Even just all around, what a great reminder to think about. The moments that we have are of consequence.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's easy to become complacent. I was thinking that, and this is a slightly different context, but like, you know, I'm gonna come home. I'm gonna get home tonight about midnight, 12:30 or something like that. And like, my wife is gonna be there. She's probably gonna be up. She stays up late. And do I just walk by? I'm like, oh yeah, we're tired, and go to sleep. Or I mean, do I look this woman in the eye? Am I glad to see my kid in the morning? Do I wake up and like, I'm gonna go? I have a roughly 9-to-5 job that's office work. And like, do I approach it going, hey man, these are moments of consequence. The next person I'm going to talk to, like this person matters, the moment matters. And like, mm-hmm. just looking at that with some energy, with some hope and some optimism and a belief that like you matter, the things you're talking about matters, how you do these things matters. Like it's, and you know, it gets blown up obviously as you start thinking of some of the context that you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, boy, it's just so easy that like for the pattern of your life to play you like the fiddle,
yeah, yeah,
as opposed to you busking with your fiddle.
Well, you know, you read through Acts or you know wherever, and it's like, well, Paul says, oh, we were going to go here, but the Holy Spirit closed the door, or he opened the door there, but we don't. You just go, okay, yeah, but what did that mean?
Yeah,
you know, what conversations took place that had him know that, oh, this is a closed door?
Yeah,
you know, right. he was dialed in, or he would have said, like, oh, God's telling me not to go there. We don't know. It'd be kind of cool if he would have given us the footnotes to that. You know, like,
right.
how did you know that was a closed door? Was it just because they ran out of tickets on the ship, or was it, you know, something bigger? You know,
right.
And, what did remember what God said to Moses when he told him that he's going to go get his people out of Egypt? And like, he didn't give him a sign beforehand. He goes, I'll give you a sign afterwards.
Yeah.
This is how you know it was me.
Yeah.
It's because you will worship me on this mountain. Like, that's after it's all done.
Yeah, right, right.
He's not giving
what about
you
the frogs?
Information to like energize you to do it. He's like, when you're done being obedient, then you'll know why I was in this thing.
Yeah.
That's a great thing to pray for. Like if I think about kind of cumulative what you guys were all talking about, like praying for just wide open eyes. Actually, I think Aiden, to a certain extent, I think what you're talking about matches with some of, or at least goes with some of what Dan's talking about, is that like we lose perspective so easily. Like we just get used to the smell of our own joint and the look of our own surroundings. Mm-hmm. And it's weird to think that that's an energy sapper, but it lulls you into a, what is a common feeling and belief that like, my life, like these are patterns. These are just things that will occur, and like there's no inertia or shift to them. But like things change when you change them. Things become different. Relationships become deeper. People meet Jesus when you introduce them to Jesus. Like these are all things that like it's a kind of a common advice thing around here. Like if you're going to change your life, you have to change your life. And so like the same thing is true if you're going to be a person of impact to the world around you. And like we know, like the very formulation of humans was that belief that humans were going to be of impact. They were going to be God's idol. They were going to stand for him in the world around, which means, and they had active duties, care for the animals, care, you know, like do it, like hoe the ground. These are things that they had to do. And so like we're built for movement. We're built for action. We're built for impact to the world around us. And like not some like you don't have to be Tony Robbins. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm just like, You're not a cog. You're not trapped in a wheel here. Like you are active. You are inertia for God into the world. And being reminded of that should get you springing up a little bit easier out of bed as opposed to avoiding it. And like maybe taking the most of some of those moments that feel like they're just average. Well, they're average because you're acting average in them. Like are there ways to greet them with the hope and optimism that the gospel brings?
Is Tony Robbins even still alive?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tony Robbins?
Yeah, this classic Ben, either reference some obscure, you know, thing you've never read and be like, oh, you haven't read that. Well, that's
okay,
too bad.
Okay, things
from
are getting...
1985, Tony Robbins.
What's a good, he was like a self-help guru.
Yeah. Like a Dr. Phil.
He's been in some movies.
Nobody does a Dr. Phil.
I know who Hammurabi is. I have no idea who that guy is.
This is what I'm saying.
Hammurabi. Has big teeth.
Tony Robbins has big teeth or Hammurabi?
He's a big, tall guy. Tony Robbins.
Anyway, I don't even know if he's successful. Who's a motivational speaker of the day?
Simon Sinek is too much of a business guy. Who's the Gary? Who's Gary Vee? No?
TED Talk.
I think I know who you're talking about.
He's kind of foul language, but he became famous for like buying crap from garage sales and selling it on eBay and stuff. Guy's motivating.
Mr. Beast.
He's not motivating, but he's pretty cool.
Are we done with motivational speakers?
Yeah, okay,
is there not
it.
Like a guy like from the like I can't name one that's popular right now.
Aiden, never have big teams come around.
Who speaks for your generation?
I don't think people my generation really care.
We don't care. Okay, they're out.
We don't do this anymore.
Yeah.
If some Mr. Ed teeth dude showed up on TV and said you should change your life, you'd be like, get your own life, Mr. Ed.
Yeah. Okay.
I feel like everything's really been said. People will be like, people are like, all right, I guess I'll buy Atomic Habits again.
Yeah. Right. Shakespeare's come back into vogue. It's all been, everything's under the sun. It's all been done.
That's right.
Okay. Anyway, you're listening to Live from the Path. I don't know. Maybe you've had, I hope that's an encouragement to you. It's encouraged me. Like, it reminds me, it's just, you know, the Lord just shines the sun on different things that got to be melted or hardened in my life. And like, I think this is a good reminder that even in things that feel like they're run of the mill, they're only run of the mill because you run them as the mill.
Yeah, and actually, if you have any interest in like either going to Zimbabwe or going to Tijuana, you should hit up the Life from the Path complaint line.
Oh yeah, hit us up. Just I'll have your phone number, so either call or text, and I can get them into the right hands and get you some more information. I'm sure Dan loves company.
I do.
Dan loves it. He loves the people.
I was just saying, I'd highly recommend this Tijuana because they're like, hey, you want to come to this Tijuana? I'm like, sure. I thought when I flew into San Diego, they'd be like, we'll come pick you up in the missionary van or whatever. And they're like, just rent a car and drive in here. I'm what? I'll be driving in no Tijuana, crossing no border like a wild man, driving like a... And they're like, yeah, this is no problem. It turns out I went with a church group that was super cool and let me hang around with them or whatever. But like the original plan was I was going to rent a car and drive into Tijuana. I'm like, are you sure? That doesn't seem like a great idea.
It sounds way worse than it actually is.
It really is. It's fine, right? Like you hear all these stories about Tijuana, and like I don't know what you had in your. Imagine every 1980s movie you have in your brain. You think this is what's happening in Tijuana, and it's like this is not what's happening.
At least not the place where you were.
No, what? No, and we were all over the city. Like you go just about everywhere, but like not everyone in California is Compton. You know what I'm saying? So like It's just kind of one of those things.
Yeah. Okay. You're listening to Live from the Path. I tell you what, we're gonna have to skip the man who's walking away from Jesus. We'll have to pick him up next week.
He sounds like a real downer anyway.
I know he seems like a real downer.
I hear saying, I'll address it right now. God says, love me, love the people around you. When you do that, you don't have near as time to focus on all the things that he's saying right now.
You don't think, okay, I'm going to come back to
I'm
it.
Not saying church people and religious folks, like most, these people can't hurt you if you're in your Bible. If you're following Jesus personally, and this is your thing, this is what you're doing, and you're not allowing other people to tear it down and to force you into feeling guilt that God did not put on you, like you accepted the guilt. Guilt is a free-range commodity. You have to accept it for it to be there. And so,
no one can put guilt on you. You have to.
That's right. I can't just guilt somebody as they walk me up past them on the street and go, "That's it. This dude in the hat's gonna have guilt all day." That's not how it works. Yeah. So either you earn it or you stole it. These are the two things. If you earned it, then you need to pacify through it. You need to pray and repent and walk out of it. If you stole it, then you're a fool. And so, like, once again, I think you're sitting in a blender of your own sadness and thinking about you and you and you and you and you, and you're stuck there.
Yeah, I will say that I find there has been a matter of consistency of this being problems with people who have Christianity as a vocation. And I don't mean like pastors, which I think is a little bit different, but like we've seen it with all kinds of musicians that have come through here.
For
people
sure.
who are like even in technical ministries, but they work for the church full time. It's like a larger church or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing. I wouldn't, there's no way I'd want, I worked for the same company for over 20 years, but like, I would not want them to be my religion, because you look at these people and you're like, this place is off the rails. You get to see how the sausage is made and you totally don't trust it. And there's no way that I could, that you could adhere to that. And the same concept of there is an almighty God and this is what he's in. He's in this thing.
Yeah.
And so like, I do think there's something to be cautious about of when your work relationship is intertwined with your expression of what it is to follow Jesus. And I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying that, like, if let's say you get a bad boss at the church and they fire you and you're upset with them, like, is it possible that starts to somehow taint your relationship with Jesus?
Because, for sure.
Yeah. Right? Just like you start irritated with the CEO after your boss fires you. You're like, he runs a bad ship. And so I just, especially with, don't take this wrong, artistic types, but with the artistic types.
Well, especially when you think God has promised you're going to be the next superstar.
That's right.
And you've spent 4 years in small rooms attracting small crowds.
Yep. Right.
And you're like, then you get mad at God.
Yes, that's right. Your worldly expectations of what it looks like to follow Jesus that are somehow also like, spray painted a little bit because you're in a Christian infrastructure believing that thing. And so
love other people. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if you could spend 10 years in a van eating terrible food, end up with back problems, and still play in front of three people, and at the end of the day, if you're loving God and loving other people, none of this bothers you at all.
Yeah. It's what you do with it too. Like, some of those things should keep you humble. Here's the deal. If God has you playing acoustic worship tunes to eight people for the next 30 years, well, then that's what he has you doing.
Yeah.
There's no way. I don't get disenfranchised with the Lord because a million people don't listen to Live from the Path. I find it a very humbling experience that we continue to do the program.
Yeah, right? I've actually been worried that people would listen to it, honestly. Like, because then they dig up 10 years worth of shows, and I said something that I definitely should not have said. You know what I'm saying? And then I'm like, man, I've ruined my whole ministry.
It never fails when someone goes, I told someone that I was on the radio program. And my first thought is, I hope they don't listen to the last one. And that's true for every show that comes out. But here's the thing. This is a safe room full of guys who aren't like, hey, this is my ticket to something.
Right.
I'm on the way up.
We're loving Jesus in here.
We don't have time to go up.
We're doing it fallibly. But we're doing it honestly, and whatever. It's a safe way to engage with something that otherwise could be destructive to you. And I don't know.
Yeah, here's the one. To tie this up, I want to make sure that don't hear me callously. I know it's very difficult to not spend time thinking about yourself in those sorts of time. Like, this, the pride is the problem with the humans. Everybody's got it. Everyone's been there. I don't want to act like anybody's nailing this, but I'm just telling you, the solution is easy. Like, the road that you need to take to help it's there's only one road. It's narrow and it's very specific. It's you need to spend time thinking about him and thinking about other people, and then you ain't got time for your own stupid problems. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just true.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, and this is the last I'll say about it. But like part of the guy's critique was, you know, I never felt closer to hell than when I was kind of under the thumb of this religion. Now he's obviously talking about people who have like influenced him or whatever. But like to your point, the man has the choice. You get to choose. Like, I've had all kinds of people who, like, Ben, I'm very disappointed in you, and I don't care. I could care less, frankly, because your opinion doesn't mean anything to me. Mm-hmm. Or I found the critique invalid. I've had like people who I care about who've been like, "Hey, you really dropped the ball on this one." And in my mind, I'm like, "No, yeah. No, I didn't. I nailed it.
What I intended."
Yeah, so I feel good about it, frankly. I mean, you could be arrogant about it. Like, you have to be able to learn and shape. But like, the reality was, to your point. If someone offered him a false version of God or an unhealthy relationship with some of the concepts of Christianity, and he accepted them, one, you didn't have to do that, and two, you're not going to find any resolution digging further into yourself. You're the guy who let the thing happen.
Yeah,
you're the guy who allowed the influence of either some perversion or, frankly, you're just rejecting something that God said was good, and you permitted that. And so, going deeper in that hole, friend, is like it's not going to come out how you want. And so then that what's going to happen is, and this is like, I think we're seeing this, is you either have to completely gaslight your own life in your own mind to make it seem like it hasn't been, like, otherwise you can't live with yourself with this type of behavior, or it's despair. Because you find out that you can't be trusted, you can't sort it out on your own. Either to a certain extent they were right, or you look so intently in your own eyes and you found nothing.
Yeah,
and then you become desperate and you make terrible decisions and you either continue to allow false people to mislead you or you, again, like make bad choices personally upon your own life. And so
it doesn't add up anyway, dude. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like at the end of the day, if I go to Shoney's and they serve me terrible food and then a guy vomits next to my table and no one cleans it up and I keep showing up at Shoney's every week, I can't be like, I can't believe it all turned foul. Right? Like, this is unknown to me. So what happened was it was good. You were there, right? Like, you did meet the peace of God. You did see the joy of God in some capacity. Now, maybe some people got in the way, or maybe God didn't do what you wanted him to do. These are all possible things. I think everybody's walked in that. But what you can't do is go back and act like it was the Shoney's. You can't go back and act like it was nothing but vomit and overpriced cheeseburgers the whole time, because it definitely was not that.
I'm going to tell you this. If I can't say Tony Robbins, you can't say Shoney's.
Why? What's a Shoney's?
Is it open anymore?
I was trying to think of somewhere in the country. I think there is still one. I was going to Google it.
Two Shoney's available.
All right.
It was Applebee's before Applebee's. You would go to the Shoney's.
Great potatoes.
What the heck? Pizza. Ever Mike at Shoney's.
Okay, y'all are making Gen X references. That I don't understand.
We're not ready. We
need some fresh blood in here, boys.
You go to Henry's and get yourself a hamburger.
It's nothing but garlic and Bengay in this whole room. We gotta do better. Okay, we gotta do this. We got one advice.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, dear life from the path. My son married a girl from Taiwan. This is gonna be good. She's sweet, but very uncultured. I have tried for more than 10 years to get along with her, but it has been very hard. We have nothing in common except my son. She doesn't cook very often, or clean, or do laundry. Her English is terrible. She dresses poorly, has no interest in her home, and celebrates no holidays. We are never invited to dinner. We always entertain them. They have no children. Our relationship with our son is strong, but I have grown to dislike her. She does very little for him. Her interest in saving money at the expense of any enjoyment is sad. I don't know what to do. Help, please. Well, you know what? It's a good thing you're not married to her. Sounds like she's minding your own business.
Wow. Wait. Okay. I think we got to be cautious about phrases like "she's uncultured."
I know that's yeah. That was
I think
like
it's definitely just a culture difference.
Yeah. She's of her own culture.
That's right.
She's cultured. She's just in not Taiwan. American.
Jeez.
She doesn't even know English, Ben.
Boy. She's from Taiwan.
Okay, here's where you could start. Here's where you could start. Is like the man obviously has no, like, if to write what he wrote and not recognize that he has a problem. Just like that obviously he's very short-sighted and narrow with how he's approaching this.
You think it's a man that wrote it?
Isn't it a dude?
It didn't say.
Oh, I thought it was the mom.
You think it's? I thought it was a mom too. I it got mom vibes for me.
Okay, it did give mom vibes.
Okay,
Because she feels threatened by another woman.
I nothing to be threatened about. She doesn't cook.
Yeah,
she
what kind
clean.
Of dad goes, okay, does this phrase come from a mom or a dad? She dresses poorly, has no interest in her home, and celebrates no holidays. That's a mom phrase.
The dad's like, score.
Yeah. Dad's like, good, I'll just stay home.
Okay, okay.
You're right. Telling me I don't have to go to Christmas?
Finally.
Yeah. Well, okay, here's the deal. Is that, like, you got a couple options here. You can be disappointed all you want. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's changing much. If you believe that your view of how things are to be done, like the cooking and the cleaning and the holidays and the having people over, is a compelling thing, then you should just treat it as compelling and she'll catch on and decide that she's compelled by it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't be disappointed that people don't agree with you.
What are you, a hypnotist? Be compelled.
No, but like, think of it. If you keep throwing these shindigs and you celebrate all these things, then like, if it's great, this lady will eventually go, hey, this is pretty great. Yeah. I want to be involved
like,
in this.
Yeah, like when you invite someone to go mushroom hunting for the first time, right? Like, if you've done a good job and they find a bunch, they're like, that was rather fun. I should go mushroom hunting later. And we'll do it again. But obviously, if you're not doing anything compelling about it and you never find mushrooms, no one's going to be excited.
Yeah, like we've skipped this step. I would say even at times, I think I've skipped it even as a parent. Like, I just want the kids to like something. But like, I've not put the effort in to go, hey, man, like, I enjoy this. Let me show you that it is enjoyable.
Yeah.
And same thing with maybe your husband or your wife. You're like, oh, I'm disappointed. She doesn't ever like to do the things I like to do. I'm like, I don't know. Did you make it sound fun? Or when she wasn't super jazzed about it, did you pout? Like, yeah. It doesn't seem very enjoyable anymore. And so, like,
Dan goes, that's the route I usually go.
Well, here's the deal. They have spent 20 years training their son who to marry, and he did it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And she probably is a lot more like the mom than she wants to admit.
It's uncomfortable.
Because that's kind of how it works.
Mm. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, so either way.
Do you think the Taiwan woman is most like the mother?
Somewhere in the character, he's seeing his mom.
Or the opposite. It's a revolt against the mom.
Or it could be, yeah, you disgust me so much, I'm going the opposite.
Dan, you're talking about out of both sides of your hooves right now.
But I'm still sticking with my first theory.
You can't ride every wave that comes by your house. It's either this thing or the opposite of
it. I'm guessing, though, she is not providing at these holidays anything that our fine new bride would enjoy for food.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
I mean, is there any rice? Is there any whatever? I've been to Taiwan.
She's 10 years in.
Yeah. And she didn't care. She's trying to make her American.
Yeah. That does sound right.
Because she's uncultured.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you got to rethink this. Are you only accepting of this person for what they otherwise, they acclimate to you? Or, like, are you allowing yourself to be enriched by their perspective and point of view and how they go about something? Now, here's the thing. You could be disappointed that, like, that your perspective is how to care for a husband, and this wife is not doing any of those things. You're like, oh, I wanted better for my son or something like that. I mean, I understand that that thought, but like, not everybody has the same values you have, including obviously your son, unless he's complaining on the side about his wife, which hopefully not.
He wouldn't dare.
But like, like, you kind of have to be okay with that. And I think that's a hard thing. We're running into this in my household, I think, actually. I think it's a hard thing as your kids grow up to find that they just value something or frankly don't value the same thing that you do, and you got to know when it's just your opinion.
Yeah,
like you don't get to parent them around about that anymore. And if they're okay with it, what are you doing? You don't get to spend your time being whizzed off about it and disappointed. Yeah. For them, they don't care.
I'll say, as a parent, that is one of the hardest transitions for me.
Yeah,
what was to go when they went to adulthood and to say what matters.
Yeah.
You know, what really matters, and what do you celebrate? Like, oh, look at you. Look at you. You're doing something different. You know, good for you.
Right.
You know, and so far there's not been anything like big that I could, was like, you know,
yep,
heartbreaking. It's been like, yeah, we're all the same. But you know, they do things, they tweak things different, you know, and,
yep.
And, but it's a hard, because before you have so much influence and so much conversation and so much talk, you know, and then you're like, I guess that's what I'm saying. The struggle is I just tried to back off. Maybe I back off too far in the beginning. Now I'm like, just like this talk, whatever. I don't know. I'm not expressing myself well, but
No, I totally get it. And yeah, I think that it's okay to recognize that for a mom and dad, it's got to be difficult that like whatever the thing that they valued, and it could be even like there's all kinds of things. Some of y'all as parents are like super granular. You're in on everything, and like you really think through a bunch of stuff, and your kid doesn't follow your line of thinking, like it feels like you failed. Because they're not thinking the way that you wanted them to think. And then you take it as some sort of antagonism against you, and it's unhealthy. And you got to let it go.
Yeah. The big major character issues are there, and it's like, well, that's the important stuff. You know? Whether they're like red or blue, I don't really care.
Yeah.
Or green or red, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter.
I think one of my kids said, Mom, as soon as I move out of the house, I'm going to eat this.
Yeah.
Like a mad fiend.
Chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah, we're going to go, and we'll go to town. And like my perspective is like, well, I mean, here's the thing. If we're right, you're going to feel real sick about a day later, and then you'll make your own decision to stop doing it.
Yeah.
But I don't really need to follow that trail. Like, go ahead, test her out, see how you do.
Make sure you're on your own insurance.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Colitis ain't my problem, man. You put it on your bill.
Colitis?
Is that a thing?
No.
Does it to do with colons?
No, that's a 1990s reference. Colitis has been taken care of.
What do they call it? IBS?
Eradicated that.
Yeah, now it's IBS.
You got to IBS.
All right, here we go. Segular says, okay, so she's not your ideal daughter-in-law. Your son married this woman for a reason. The question is, does she make him happy? If the answer is yes, devote your energy to focusing on that rather than your negative feelings about her. And when you entertain them, rather than do it grudgingly, remember you are doing it for him and smile. Yeah, I mean, that was still even a little bit lenient.
Yeah.
You're kind of a jerk.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, people are like, you're different than me. Basically, you wanted a mirror and you got a window, right? Like you were hoping to see a reflection of you in who your son married. And I think I'm on the Dan train, but on the opposite. I think it's not the woman you envisioned. You had a Susie Homemaker in your mind who was Anglo-Saxon and Protestant and all these things. And he married a gal from Taiwan that does not carry our same customs and does not like burning ahead on a clear English accent, and you're nitpicking these things that, like, given the fact that she's from Taiwan, should answer 9 out of 10 of your questions on why she doesn't celebrate our holidays, why her English is not very great, why she doesn't keep a house the way you would expect a house to be kept, because none of that stuff happens in Taiwan the way it happens here.
What about Thanksgiving and July 4th? What's wrong with this girl?
That's right. She doesn't understand what country produces some of the things that come around her here. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I think you're just being, like, on purpose obtuse and stubborn about this particular marriage, and I think you should either change your ways or stay out of it.
That seems right. All right, you're listening live on The Path. Thanks for hanging out with us this week. We really do appreciate it. Make sure you hit up that complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. We'd love to hear from you. Also, if you're following Live from The Path on the Instagram, apparently the posts are annoying. I will see what I can do about that.
He's not going to do anything.
I'm going to see what I can do. I can turn it off. You can just go use the Facebook. The Facebook posts the link to stuff.
No, listen, man.
It's working correctly.
All the cool kids are on Insta.
Nah, that's true. It's the devil's playground.
You say no.
No, that's true.
Yeah, it's true. See?
Okay.
I use Facebook for Facebook Marketplace. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. I can see that. All the people are on the Insta, Ben. You just got to get it so it's putting out the right content.
I don't think it can be done. It requires manual effort. anyway, thanks for hanging out with us. Aiden Stone, thanks for coming in, buddy. We really appreciate it. You're welcome at any time. Dan, you're also welcome at any time. Mike, we'll have to think about it.
That's fair.
Based upon some of the stuff you said.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll try to put a show together for next week. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from The Path.
Don't you think?
Oh, and an ad came on from a Tunes. This is what I get for not paying for the Spotify. Hold on a second.
You don't have Spotify Premium?
No way.
Or that's YouTube Premium?
No, I don't. Doggone it anyway. I'm giving away free ads for this stuff. What do you want? Hold on. In the middle of the tune, that's a rook. All right, I'm not saying it again. Go about your business. Thanks for listening to Live from The Path.